The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jackie Marino for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Nutrition News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Nutrition Action Health Letter. News You Can Lose by Bonnie Liebman. COVID is, and should be, the front page health news. Yet new studies about diet and health still make headlines. Some reporters weed out the sketchy studies. Others can't resist a juicy headline, especially when it's about trendy topics like chocolate, full-fat dairy, diet drinks, or meat. Here's how to see through a few of the latest. Eating a high intake of chocolate in the morning hours could actually help with fat burning, reported Fox News in June. Starting your day off with chocolate may not have the dire effects on weight gain you'd suspect. Researchers had 19 women consume roughly 3.5 ounces of milk chocolate containing 540 calories, more than a quarter of their daily intake, either an hour after waking or an hour before going to bed for 2 weeks each. They were given no chocolate for 2 other weeks. The researchers reported that morning or nighttime, chocolate intake did not lead to weight gain, said Fox. But the women reported eating more calories with chocolate than without. So why would they have gained weight after 3 or 4 weeks? Also, on average, weight didn't change. But women who cut back the least on other foods gained a few pounds, while those who cut back the most lost a few. And did chocolate in the morning actually help with fat burning? Only compared to chocolate in the evening, which led to more carbohydrate burning, women burned no more fat during the weeks they ate chocolate than when they ate none. Bottom line, don't expect chocolate to burn off body fat. A key goal of the study was to see whether people process food differently at different times for the day. For that, stay tuned. New research suggests that middle-aged adults can lower their long-term risk for heart failure by simply drinking enough water on a daily basis, reported a Health Day article on USNews.com in August. Wow. The finding follows an analysis that stacked heart health up against blood salt levels, an indicator for overall fluid intake, among nearly 16,000 middle-aged men and women over a 25-year period, explained the article. The study team then tracked heart failure incidents along with problems the heart's left ventricular pumping capacity over the ensuing years. The result? Those whose blood sodium levels had exceeded 142 milliliters in middle age saw their risk for both heart issues surge when they hit age 70 or older. That trigger point is in the normal range for blood sodium, noted the article. Sounds like big news. Until you reach the end of the article, where Robert Eckel, past president of the American Heart Association, is quoted. These data in the abstract are interesting, he notes. Abstract? Yep, the study hasn't even been published. The findings are only hypothesis-generating, added Eckel, warning that too much fluid in the wrong patient could be harmful. The article then cautions, research presented at medical meetings should be viewed as preliminary until published in a peer-reviewed journal. Oh, so water may not be key to your heart's health. Bottom line, it's too early to know if drinking more water can prevent heart failure. A new study revealed that some diet drinks could cause increased appetites among women and people with obesity, reported Newsweek.com, citing an NPR story in October. The researchers wanted to know, does a person's weight or sex impact the efficacy of sucralose? In other words, does sucralose help a person lose weight, said Newsweek, which went on to describe the study. Researchers asked participants to drink 300 milliliters of water, or a 300-milliliter drink that either contains sucrose or sucralose. Sucrose is table sugar. Sucralose is an artificial sweetener. The results? 2 hours later, when the participants were offered an all-you-can-eat buffet, women consumed greater total calories after consuming drinks with sucralose, explained Newsweek. Yes, the women did eat about 85 more calories from the buffet on the day they got the drink sweetened with sucralose rather than sucrose. But when you include the calories in the drinks, the women consumed about 215 more calories on the day they got the 300-calorie sugary drink rather than the zero-calorie sucralose drink. That fits with a 2019 study which found that people with overweight or obesity gained weight when researchers gave them drinks sweetened with sugar, but not sucralose, for 12 weeks. And it's no surprise that women ate more from the buffet on the day they got the sucralose drink. They hadn't eaten since the night before, so they were probably hungrier 2 hours after they got the zero-calorie drink rather than the 300-calorie drink. What's more, the women consumed fewer calories on the days they got the sucralose drink than on the days they got water. Bottom line, avoid sugary drinks. If low-calorie sweeteners help you break the sugar habit, stick with safe sweeteners like stevia or erythritol. Sucralose, aspartame, and acesulfame, potassium, are poorly tested or cause cancer in animals. As cheese lovers keep warnings about eating too much saturated fat, here comes another study that goes against the conventional wisdom about heart health and dairy fat, reported Today.com in October. Researchers analyzed blood samples from more than 4,000 adults in Sweden and followed them for 16 years, said Today. After adjusting for age, lifestyle, dietary habits, and other risk factors, the people with higher levels of dairy fat intake biomarkers had a lower risk of cardiovascular disease compared to those who ate less dairy fat. So dairy fat is good? No, which Today eventually gets around to saying. A healthy dietary pattern includes dairy in the form of fat-free or low-fat milk, yogurt, and cheese, according to Dietary Guidelines for Americans 2020 through 2025, the article noted. CNN.com's report on the same study did a better job at explaining why. The group with the highest biomarker of dairy intake also had, among other things, a significantly lower BMI, were more physically active, had a lower smoking rate, lower rates of type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease, a higher level of education, higher intakes of vegetables, fruit, and fish, and lower intake of processed meat. All factors associated with a lower risk of cardiovascular disease, said the report, quoting Alice H. Lichtenstein, director of the Tufts University Cardiovascular Nutrition Laboratory. Although the researchers adjusted for those factors, they can't be ruled out, added Lichtenstein. Associations cannot establish causality. Bottom line? Stick to low-fat dairy, as the American Heart Association and other health authorities recommend. To increase our chances for a long life, we probably should take at least 7,000 steps a day or play sports such as tennis, cycling, swimming, jogging, or badminton for more than 2.5 hours per week, according to two large-scale new studies of the relationship between physical activity and longevity, reported the New York Times in September. The two studies, which together followed more than 10,000 men and women for decades, show that the right types and amounts of physical activity reduce the risk of premature death by as much as 70%, noted the Times. But they also suggest that there can be an upper limit to the longevity benefits of being active, and pushing beyond that ceiling is unlikely to add years to our lifespans, and in extreme cases, might be detrimental. Detrimental? Yikes! Only one of the two studies suggested any harm. Residents of Copenhagen who reported doing sports for more than 10 hours a week had an 18% higher risk of dying over the next 25 years than those who did 2.6 to 4.5 hours a week. But the Danish researchers asked the roughly 8,700 participants how often they exercised only once when the study began. A recent study of roughly 134,000 U.S. health professionals also found a higher risk of dying in the most active people identified by a single 28-year-old questionnaire. However, when the researchers used their complete data from questionnaires sent every 2 years for 28 years, the higher risk of dying in the most active people vanished. Bottom line, there is no good evidence that exercise, even at 3 to 5 times the recommended levels, increases the risk of dying prematurely, say the physical activity guidelines for Americans. Those levels, at least 2.5 to 5 hours of moderate, or 1.25 to 2.5 hours of vigorous, exercise per week. New research shows that sleeping too much or too little could have a negative impact on the brain, reported USA Today in September. A peer-reviewed study published by the journal JAMA Neurology found that people who sleep 6 hours or less every night had elevated levels of beta amyloid, a protein that accumulates to form amyloid plaques, one of the first markers of Alzheimer's disease, said USA Today. The study also revealed that adults who sleep longer than 9 hours show increased signs in depressive symptoms, body mass index, and cognitive decline. The results suggest that there's something happening in short sleep that looks like Alzheimer's disease, noted the study's lead author, and that there is still a mystery with long sleepers, said the article. Oh, so too much sleep doesn't increase the risk for Alzheimer's, as the headline implied? At least USA Today cited some of the study's limitations. It relied on participants self-reporting how much sleep they got, noted the article. Participants also didn't give information regarding health issues such as cardiovascular disease or diabetes, which could explain some of the differences. Nor did the researchers have data on sleep apnea or the use of medications that affect sleep. But USA Today missed the biggest limitation. This kind of study, just a snapshot in time, can't say whether people sleeping too much or too little could have a negative impact on the brain, or whether early Alzheimer's or other brain disorders may have caused people in the study to sleep too little or too much. Bottom line, don't assume that too little or too much sleep causes Alzheimer's or other types of dementia. Plant-based meat alternatives may look and cook like real meat, but scientists say that the nutritional components may not be the same, reported a New York Post article originally published by Fox News in July. Alternative meat makers mimic the look, taste, and texture of meat with iron-carrying molecules from soy, among other ingredients like beets and berries, and ramp up the protein with soy, peas, and other plant-based ingredients, explained the article. The study, however, found that several metabolites proven to be vital to human health were found either exclusively or in greater amounts of beef, including creatine, spermine, anserine, cysteamine, glucosamine, squalene, and the omega-3 fatty acid DHA. These nutrients are important for our brain and other organs, including our muscles, Stephen Van Vliet, a postdoctoral researcher at the Duke Molecular Physiology, said in a statement. Who wouldn't want nutrients important for our brain and other organs? Never mind that beef has only tiny amounts of nutrients like DHA. The plant meats the study looked at had some nutrients that aren't found in beef, noted the article. But that's not to say that one is better than the other, said Van Vliet. Good to know. It also would have been good for Post readers to know that Van Vliet had received a grant from the North Dakota Beef Association for another study. Van Vliet discussed that in the new meat study, but Fox and the Post did not. Bottom line, don't worry about news reports that plant-based meats are inferior to real meat. For starters, red meat is probably carcinogenic, according to the International Agency for Research on Cancer. Believe it or not, eating healthy fats scorches belly fat, declared the September article on the Eat This, Not That website. In a 12-week study on 105 adults with either overweight or obesity, EatThis.com explained one group was provided with a daily meal that included an avocado, while the other group's daily meal did not include avocado, though it contained foods with similar ingredients and calories. Those results? The females who consumed an avocado daily showed a reduction in visceral abdominal fat, the hard-to-lose dangerous fat that stores within the abdominal cavity and surrounds the organs, along with a reduction in the ratio of visceral fat to subcutaneous fat, the type of fat that you can pinch since it lays directly beneath the skin. No changes were seen in the men, said EatThis.com, which, to its credit, noted that the Haas Avocado Board funded the study. However, the researchers' plan, which they posted on the government's Registry of Clinical Trials, clinicaltrials.gov, in 2016, was to look at men and women together. Those results? The reported change in visceral fat was no different between the avocado eaters and the control group. However, the control group lost subcutaneous fat. That made its ratio of visceral to subcutaneous fat worse than the avocado group's. But why disappoint your funders? Instead, a press release about the study said, Women who consumed avocado as part of their daily meal had a reduction in deeper visceral abdominal fat. Too bad it wasn't statistically significant. Bottom line, enjoy avocado. Just don't expect that eating it scorches belly fat. And now a recipe from the healthy cook, Kate Sherwood. How sweet and sour it is. For this salad, any apple will do, but to pump up the sweet and sour, pick a sweet tart one like Pink Lady or Honeycrisp. For a dazzling mix, use half a sweet apple, Fuji or Gala, plus half a tart Granny Smith. Sweet and sour winter salad. Ingredients: 2 tablespoons extra virgin olive oil, 2 tablespoons white or regular balsamic vinegar, 2 teaspoons whole grain mustard, 1 teaspoon maple syrup, honey, or brown sugar, a half a teaspoon reduced sodium soy sauce, 1 teaspoon Worcestershire sauce, a quarter teaspoon kosher salt, 2 cups shredded cabbage, purple or green, 4 cups torn kale leaves or baby kale, 1 apple, cored and thinly sliced, and a quarter cup roasted salted sunflower seeds. Serves 4. Make the dressing. In a large bowl, whisk together the oil, vinegar, mustard, maple syrup, soy, and Worcestershire sauces, and salt. Toss the cabbage and kale with the dressing. Add half the apples and sunflower seeds and toss again. Transfer to a serving bowl. Scatter the remaining apples and sunflower seeds on top. Food fine. Go with the grain. It won't break the bank. It's at home in dozens of dishes. It packs far more fiber than brown rice, yet cooks in a fraction of the time. Who knew that unassuming bulgur could do all that? Fact is, when you want a break from rice or pasta, you can't do much better than nutty-tasting bulgur. Why? It's versatile. Tabbouleh, a Middle Eastern bulgur salad with parsley, mint, scallions, and tomato, is only the beginning. Say hello to your new go-to grain for pilafs, salads, grain bowls, and soups. It's also a great whole grain sub for couscous. Tired of oatmeal? Heat up some bulgur with cinnamon, apples, or pears, and walnuts or pecans. It's a time saver. Bulgur dried cracked wheat that's been steamed or parboiled is a breeze. Just add boiling water, cover, soak for 10 to 15 minutes, then drain. That's for a fine or couscous size grind. A coarser or medium grind like Bob's Red Mill Red Bulgur needs a simmer or a longer soak. It's a superstar. A serving of bulgur, about 3/4 cup cooked, has roughly 5 grams of fiber, plus a decent dose of the vitamins and minerals you'd expect from a whole grain, magnesium, iron, zinc, and a bunch of E vitamins. Nice! Don't feel like hunting down a recipe? Dish of the month, pistachio citrus bulgur. Whisk together the zest and juice of half a clementine and half a lemon with 1 tablespoon olive oil, 2 tablespoon minced red onion, and a quarter teaspoon salt. Toss with 2 cups cooked bulgur and a quarter cup chopped pistachios. Food fail. Bigger Mac. Panera's latest craveable fall menu drop combines Panera's signature mac and cheese, layered with fontina and mozzarella cheeses, sprinkled with Parmesan crisps, and sandwiched between slices of classic white meat, toasted to perfection, said the September press release announcement, Panera's new grilled mac and cheese sandwich. Congrats! Who'd have guessed that a chain with a decent selection of salads would be among the first to serve a pasta sandwich? We already eat too many refined carbs like white bread, pasta, rice, and flour tortillas, but combining 2 to create an entree? Genius! What's next? A fried rice sandwich? Panera's grilled mac and cheese has 860 calories. That dwarfs a Big Mac, 550, and even tops a Burger King Whopper, 660, or a McDonald's double quarter pounder with cheese, 740. Not to be outdone, the grilled mac's saturated fat, 24 grams, and sodium, 1,650 milligrams, also beat all 3 burgers. And that's without the mac's side. A bag of chips, an apple, or, why not, a 180-calorie white flour baguette. It's the ultimate collaboration that our guests never knew they needed, said Panera's head chef and chief food innovation officer. Needed like a hole in the head. long-lasting makeup. PFAs found in roughly half of tested cosmetics by Caitlin Dow. No one wants to get out of the swimming pool looking like a raccoon, says Graham Pesley, a professor of physics at the University of Notre Dame. True enough, but waterproof mascara has a price. Many companies use chemicals known as PFAs, or per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, to make cosmetics more spreadable, waterproof, or long-lasting. Here's what you should know. PFAs are everywhere. The class of more than 4,000 chemicals is used in nonstick cookware, waterproof clothing, food packaging, carpets, cosmetics, and far more. But they come at a cost. PFAs are often called forever chemicals because they may take thousands of years to break down. That means they accumulate in soil, water, air, and our bodies. And while scientists don't have definitive answers on the health risks, exposure to some PFAs has been linked to problems like cancer, higher cholesterol levels, and immune suppression. PFAs from makeup can enter the body through the skin, the tear ducts, or the gut. But until Graham Pesley looked, no one knew how often PFAs are added to cosmetics in North America. Pesley's team tested 231 cosmetics, including foundations, concealers, mascaras, lip products like lipsticks, liners, glosses, and balms, eye products like shadows, liners, and pencils, and more. Roughly half of the foundations, lip products, eye products, and mascaras contained high levels of fluorine, an indicator of PFAs. The study didn't name brands. Fluorine levels as high as we saw suggest that PFAs were intentionally added, said Pesley. It's not just contamination from the assembly or something like that. Especially fluorine-laden categories included waterproof mascaras, liquid lipsticks, and cosmetics advertised as long-lasting or wear-resistant. From there, Pesley tested 29 foundations, mascaras, and lip products for 53 individual PFAs. All tested positive for at least 4. A handful contained as much as 13 PFAs. The most common question I get is, how can I avoid PFAs in my makeup, says Pesley. Unfortunately, I can't tell you. Just one of the 29 products that he tested for individual PFAs had PFAs listed as ingredients. Labeling is totally inadequate, he notes. And you can't assume that, say, an ordinary, rather long-lasting or waterproof lipstick or mascara is PFAs-free. Don't wear makeup? PFAs in cosmetics still matter. These chemicals get washed down the drain or the leftovers make their way to the landfill, says Pesley. Eventually, it all contaminates the environment or ends up in our water supply. In October, the EPA proposed limits on PFAs in drinking water. Cosmetic companies should require their supply chains to be PFA-free, says Pesley. They need an independent lab to regularly test a random sample of their products. That's not impossible or terribly expensive. The good news from the study is that not all cosmetics had PFAs, so it can be done. Some changes are in the works. In 2020, California banned 13 kinds of added PFAs in cosmetics as of January 2025. That should lead companies to eliminate those PFAs nationwide. At Ulta, you can choose brands that use clean ingredients, which means they are made without PFAs and several other chemicals. And in response to Pesley's study, a group of senators has introduced the No PFAs in Cosmetics Act, which would require the FDA to ban added PFAs in cosmetics, including makeup, lotion, perfume, shampoo, and nail polish. If we could avoid using these chemicals in cosmetics, says Pesley, why wouldn't we? Quick studies, a snapshot of the latest research on diet, exercise, and more. Tackling tough-to-treat hypertension. An estimated 20 to 30% of people with high blood pressure have resistant hypertension. That typically means their pressure is still high, even though they're taking several drugs to lower it. Researchers randomly assigned 140 inactive people with resistant hypertension and excess weight to either detailed advice on a DASH diet, weekly weight loss counseling, and supervised exercise 3 times a week, or 1 hour of advice on diet, weight loss, and exercise. All were told to keep taking their meds. After 4 months, average systolic blood pressure, the higher number, fell by roughly 13 points in the group given more help and by 7 points in the hour of advice group. What to do? Whether you have hypertension or want to prevent it, try exercise, losing excess weight, and a DASH, or dietary approaches to stop hypertension, diet to lower blood pressure. For more on a fruit and veggie-rich, lower-sodium DASH diet, go to nutritionaction.com/DASH. Pick a bean, any bean. Beans can help lower LDL, or bad cholesterol, says a study partly funded by Canadian bean growers. Researchers told 64 people with high LDL to eat a daily serving of half cup of beans, 1 cup of beans, or 1 cup of white rice for 4 weeks each. Participants were given rice plus cans of black, navy, pinto, dark, red kidney, and white kidney beans. After 4 weeks, LDL levels averaged 159 milligrams per DL, or with the rice, 155 milligrams per DL, half cup beans, and 150 milligrams per DL, 1 cup of beans. Only the difference between the cup of beans and the rice was statistically significant. What to do? Lentil soup, black bean tacos, three bean chili, red beans and rice, anyone? Cold vaccines and the heart. Myocarditis, or inflammation of the heart muscle, is an adverse effect of the Pfizer and Moderna COVID vaccines, but it's rare. In July, the CDC reported roughly 63 cases of myocarditis per million second shots given to males aged 12 to 17, 51 per million in males aged 18 to 24, and 17 per million in males aged 25 to 29, and 2 per million in males aged 30 or older. For females, there were roughly 4 cases per million in those 12 to 29, and 1 million in those 30 or older. 96% of vaccine recipients who developed myocarditis were hospitalized. By June, 95% of them had been discharged from the hospital, and none had died. What to do? Get vaccinated. The benefits outweigh the risks. We've run out of time for today's episode of Nutrition News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jackie Marino, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Nutrition News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.